one time in Naimasharanya, the sages inquired from Srila Sutta Goswami to tell the story of the incarnation of the Lord of the name Venkateshwar. He narrated the following, that at one time Sri Narada Muni traveled to Brahma Loka. Narada Muni, being the self-manifested son of Lord Brahma, has that special power. Narada Muni bajayi vina radhikara mananame. He's always playing his veena and chanting the holy names of Sri Radharamani. And he has the power to go anywhere and everywhere according to his will. And he could travel faster than the speed of light. He can go to Svetadvip, to Kailash, to Brahmaloka, to Vaikuntha, and come back down to this earth, all in a matter of minutes. That is the power of his mystical devotion. So he traveled to Satyaloka, where Brahma was surrounded by many of the chief demigods. And Brahma said to Narada that he was feeling a very deep concern in his heart. Krishna says in Gita, Aham Bija Pratapita, that he is the seed-giving father of all living beings. But within this universe, the secondary father is Lord Brahma. So he has a love and a concern for everyone in this universe that he has created. People in this age of Kali are going to be so much covered by material desires. There will be such pollution and sin everywhere. What is their hope? We must call the Lord down. We must call him down to preside somewhere in this earth planet. So Narada Muni, I am giving you this assignment. Somehow or other, by your creative genius, devise a means of bringing Vishnu to the earth. What is Guru Parampara? It's about following the order of the previous acharyas. So Narada Muni came to the bank of the river Saraswati, where there was an assembly of great sages who were performing a sacrifice for the welfare of humanity. There were various sages of various sects that were all united together for this purpose. So Narada Muni, he challenged them. He said, if this sacrifice is really going to be powerful to satisfy the Lord, we all must be fixed in one goal together. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that if you throw a rock in a pond, it creates circles. If all the rocks go to the same center point, then all the circles are harmonious with each other. But if you put the rocks in different places, then all the circles will collide. So for there to be real unity, there must be a common center, a common focus that we all agree. And on the basis of that common focus of the center of who we're trying to please, what we're trying to do, then all of our disagreements can somehow or other be neutralized. So Narada Muni challenged. You are all worshipping in the sacrifice the Lord. But which Lord are you worshipping? We must all be unified. Who is supreme? So So some of those sages said, Brahma is supreme. And others said, Shankar Bhagavan is supreme. And others said, no, Vishnu is supreme. There was some disagreement. So Narada Muni, he said, let us resolve the disagreement by testing the Trimurtis to see who is perfectly situated in pure goodness. And whoever is, to the ultimate extent, then we will all agree to worship only him. So all the sages agreed. So then they had to decide who is going to be the person who tests the greatest, most powerful of all the gods. Vishishta Muni, Atri Muni, and others, they said, we are not going to perform this service. To test these powerful lords? It's like testing a red hot coal by touching it. We'll be burnt. But we know who has the power to do so. It is the son of Lord Brahma himself, Bhrigu Muni. Bhrigu Muni did not like this idea. But everyone was appealing to him. Please, this is so important for the welfare of all the world. So Bhrigu Muni accepted. Bhrigu Muni first went to Lord Brahma's abode, Satyaloka. When Sri Brahmaji saw him coming, oh, he was so happy. His own son has come to him. Before I forget, there is two other very, very special guests that we must welcome. Ramesh Chandra Goswami and his son Sushil, who are chief pujaris from the temple of Nandagram, Krishna and Balaram's eternal home in Sri Braj Bhumi. Let us welcome them. That happens to be Lord Shiva's head. And Brahma happens to be Brahma's forehead, Barsana. So now we'll go back to Brahmaloka. Bhrigu Muni came in, and Brahma, seeing his own son, oh, he was so happy, he got up to receive Bhrigu Muni. Bhrigu Muni ignored his father. He didn't offer obeisances. He didn't offer words of respect. This is a great offense. To not honor a senior personality is low class. It's uncultured. Of course, in Kali Yuga, it's quite common. But what is etiquette about? Etiquette is about offering proper respect to every living entity according to our particular relationship with them. And to seniors, especially one's father, like Brahma. He's not only father, he's a guru. To offer prayers, to offer obeisances, to offer services is mandatory. And the father wants to see the son growing up properly, behaving right. So when Brahma saw that Bhrigu Muni did not acknowledge him at all, ignored him, Brahma became angry. He became very angry. But somehow or other, because Bhrigu was his son, he controlled his anger and didn't say anything. It is explained by Srila Prabhupada that anger is like fire. Now, in the process of creation, first there's fire, and from fire, water is created. The elements are created from the subtle to the gross. First there's ego, then intelligence, then mind, then ether, then air, then fire, and from fire, water. Water is created by fire, but to extinguish fire, you use water. So Lord Brahma, somehow or other, with his good intelligence, he controlled his anger. But Bhrigu Muni saw that he was deeply affected. So he left that place. Next, he went to Mount Kailash, where Lord Shiva was sitting with Parvati. And when Lord Shiva saw his brother Bhrigu approaching, oh, he was so happy. My dear brother Bhrigu, you have come all the way to my abode. Welcome, welcome. Lord Shiva came to embrace him. And Bhrigu Muni's face just curled in disgust. He said, do not touch me. Your body is contaminated by filthy ashes from the crematorium. And you have snakes all over you. And you associate with despicable demons in the mode of ignorance. Do not touch me. You will make me impure. When Lord Shiva heard this, his heart exploded with anger. His eyes became red. He picked up his trident and charged toward Bhrigu to punish him. But Parvati, who Prabhupada says is also known as Trigunamayi, she pacified Lord Shiva. And Bhrigu Muni left that place. Then he went to Svetadvip, the abode of Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu was laying in a flower bed. Lakshmi Devi was massaging his lotus feet. As soon as Bhrigu came into the room, he just ran right into the room and poof, kicked Vishnu right in the chest with his foot. Lord Vishnu got up. He put Bhrigu Muni on his bed and spoke. He said, oh, today we are so fortunate that a great sage, a Brahmin, has come to our home to sanctify us. It is not a small fortune when a great, great personality comes out of their causeless mercy to our home. Not only have you sanctified Svetadvip by your lotus feet, but by putting your feet on my chest, you have made my body a place of pilgrimage. But I fear something, that your feet are so soft like a rose, and my chest is so hard like a thunderbolt. I think that I must have caused pain to your lotus foot. So please, let me lovingly massage your lotus feet. And Vishnu massaged the lotus feet of Bhrigu Muni, extolling the good fortune that he had received. When Bhrigu Muni saw, when he saw the tolerance and the pure goodness of Vishnu's love, he was overwhelmed. He could not say a word. His voice was choked up. Tears were streaming from his eyes. He began to dance in ecstasy, extolling the glories of Lord Vishnu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada explains there's three types of offenses. Offense of the mind, offense of the word, and the corporal offense, the offense of the body. Each one is progressively more severe by nature. The least type of offense is an offense of the mind. He committed an offense of the mind to Lord Brahma, and Brahma was angry. And then the next most severe offense is the offense of the words, speaking harsh, impolite words to another. He did that to Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva became very angry. But to Lord Vishnu, he performed the greatest of all offenses, offenses to the body, by hardly kicking him in the chest. But Lord Vishnu, lovingly forgave him. Displaying his supreme greatness. Srila Prabhupada, in this connection, in Krishna book, he writes one sentence that I have always held so very dear in my heart as a guiding light, even in the most difficult circumstances. Please listen. What is greatness? People are called Mahatma. People are considered great because they perform nice music or they act very nicely on the cinema or the television. People are great because they're in political positions. People are great because they have lots of money and power. People are great because they're strong athletes. People are great because they're beautiful. So many ways people are considered great in this world. But what is the standard of real greatness according to Srimad Bhagavatam? Srila Prabhupada herein writes that a person's greatness has to be estimated by one's ability to tolerate provoking situations. There are the negative and positive type of provoking situations. When we are offended, when we are mistreated, when we are insulted, or even when we are persecuted, our greatness is to what extent we can tolerate that. And Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas, they tell us that forgiveness and tolerance are inseparable. The power to forgive is the greatness of a person. To tolerate that anger, to tolerate the urge for vengeance, to tolerate the urge to think ill of someone, or want to destroy someone, or want to see the downfall of someone. To be forgiving, to be a well-wisher, that is greatness. But another type of provoking situation are temptations. Temptations to sell out the dignity of our ideals. For some cheap benediction of this world. To lie, to cheat. To give up our spiritual principles. Break our vows. To enjoy something beautiful. Or someone beautiful. To attain wealth. Or position. Or prestige. Yes, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained to us that the prestige and the honor of this world should be seen as despicable and abominable as the stool of a boar. Have any of you ever smelled the stool of a boar? Well, because I'm a crazy person, I have. Because I wanted to see what Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was talking about. And if you think your... Of course, people don't really think their own stool is so bad. But somebody else's stool, unbearable. Yes? Your own stool, because it comes from you, there's something special about it. Even though you flush it down the toilet and... But somebody else's stool, gagging. Yes? But boars are wild pigs. They eat stool. It's horrible. It's abominable. But that is how we have to see the prestige and the glorifications of this world. Taking high positions in this world and enjoying the prestige is like eating the stool of a boar. Smearing it all over your body as decoration. It's not our purpose. So yes, the temptations that may come, we must learn to tolerate them. Let us repeat these immortal words. A person's greatness. Louder, please. Has to be estimated. By one's ability to tolerate provoking situations. And the example is given. A small lamp is easily either pushed this way or that way, or even extinguished by even a gentle wind. But because the sun is the greatest of all luminaries, even the hurricanes taking place in Andhra Pradesh, even the hurricanes that take place in New Orleans, America, even the cyclones and greatest, most powerful winds have absolutely no effect to the sun. So a great person is like sun, always fixed in one's ideal, immovable. And in Krishna's eyes, we will be tested. We will be tested. So Bhrigu Muni went back to the banks of the Saraswati and he told the whole story. He told the whole story to all the sages and they all unanimously agreed that Vishnu is the supreme personality of Godhead. And thus they performed their sacrifice chanting his holy name. Everyone was very happy, except Lakshmi Devi. She could not tolerate this insult to her eternal Lord and Master, not I am. It was unbearable that she witnessed such a horrible sin of a mortal man coming and kicking with his foot in the chest the Lord of her life. And the Lord is Srinivas. That means he is the abode of Lakshmi. She's eternally residing upon his chest. She knows the sanctity. She worships the Lord there eternally. Lakshmi Devi considered that she had become so sinful by seeing the sin. It was unbearable for her. She explained her mind to Lord Narayan. But the Lord took it all very light. Actually, Srila Prabhupada explains this, that any offense to oneself, one should be forgiving. But offense to the Lord or another devotee, we can become like fire. Yes? When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was insulted in so many ways, he just forgave. When Nityananda was beaten on the head by Jagai and Madhai, he forgave. But Lord Chaitanya became like fire. We should tolerate any injustice to oneself. But we should not tolerate the injustices to other devotees or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So yes, Lakshmi Devi was in this mood. My Lord, you may be forgiving and tolerant to the offense against you, but my heart is burning with anguish for what I had seen. And then she proclaimed, I will leave Vaikuntha and I will go down to the Bhuloka where I will perform tapasya to atone for the sin of seeing this offense. Thus Lakshmi Devi departed from her abode and wandered throughout this world, ultimately coming to the holy place, Kolhapur. She made that her residence. It was in the holy abode of Kolhapur where Mahalakshmi sat to perform tapasya in the ecstasy of her love for the Supreme Lord. As time went on, the Lord Narayan was feeling immense separation from Lakshmi Devi. Even the land of Svetadvip had no charm for him without Lakshmi Devi. So he decided to come down to the earth to search for her. And thus, perfectly according to Narada Muni's plan, the Supreme Personality of God had descended to this world as Srinivas. This is an appropriate name because Srinivas means that he is always the abode of Lakshmi, and now Lakshmi has left him. So he has come to search for her, to bring her back home. He walked throughout the world, through various forests and jungles and villages, and ultimately came here, where we are sitting today, to the Shesh Achala. Why is it called such? It is told that one time the great and powerful Devata Vayudev came to visit the Lord in Vaikuntha. And Adi Shesha was at that time guarding and told Vayu that you have to wait and bow down your head before the Lord. But Vayu was not happy with this. He was eager. So a little argument took place. And the Lord came, and in order to alleviate the argument, he said, why don't you have a contest to see who is stronger between the two of you? Everything the Lord does has a very, very eternal purpose. So it was arranged that Adi Shesha put his coils around one of the peaks of Mount Meru, named Ananda Parvat. And the test was, who's stronger? Whether Vayu could move that mountain out of the grasps of the coils of Adi Shesha. So Vayu was sending the most massive winds, unbelievable winds. In this world, we have seen hurricanes and cyclones and tornadoes. These are just little tiny... But when Vayu all the force of all of his power blowing. But he could not even slightly move even a molecular particle, Adishesha, or the mountain from where they were holding. So he was blowing and blowing and sending wind after wind after wind, and Adishesha was just there holding. And days and days went by, and meanwhile, all the air and all the wind at the disposal of Vayu, he was just using for this purpose, and the rest of the universe was suffocating. Indra was calling out, please, you know, this Adishesha, you know, do something. You may be winning the fight, but what about the rest of us? So Narada Muni appeared and started playing his veena and singing the sweet glories of the Lord. Meanwhile, Vayu was exhausted, so he stopped his winds. And at that time, Narada Muni was singing and playing. And Adishesha was so charmed by the glories of the Lord that he lifted one of his hoods to listen carefully. As soon as he did that, Vayu blew right under that hood with all of his force. And Adishesha and the whole mountain peak of Ananda Parvat went flying, and landed right here on earth. Harivo! And Vayudev came down and begged apologies. I'm sorry what I have done. Please come back to Vaikuntha. And Adishesha said, it is the Lord's Leela. It is His plan that I remain here. So this is known as Shesha Parvat because these seven mountains that consist the abode of Lord Venkateshwar is none different than the body of Ananta Shesha. And it is considered to be non-different than Vaikuntha. Srinivas was traveling in this area. And ultimately, he made his residence in the hole in the center of a large anthill that was situated under a large tamarind tree. There he performed tapasya. No eating, no sleeping, just meditation on Lakshmi Devi to bring her back. Lord Brahma saw the situation of the Lord, the nature of the Lord's love, that he has left the eternal abode of Vaikuntha where there's all opulences and he's living as an ascetic under an anthill, fasting. So Brahma approached Shiva and together they went to Lakshmi Devi in Kolhapur and devised a plan so that the Lord could be fed. Lord Brahma became a cow, Shiva became a calf, and Lakshmi Devi a cowherd girl. She, with a little stick, she led the cow and the calf to a place called Narayanpur, which was the capital of the kings of the Chola dynasty. And she proclaimed that I would like to see the king and queen because I have a very excellent cow and calf that I want to sell to them. The king and queen came and saw that cow and calf. They were so special. They were willing to pay anything. And Lakshmi Devi, she charged a large price. Just like Srila Prabhupada said, if we give our books out for free, then people may take them very cheaply. But if they have to pay a price, then they'll have some understanding that this is valuable. In 1966 in New York City, Srila Prabhupada began the Hare Krishna movement. At that time, the devotees, the first large public program they ever made, they rented out an auditorium in Manhattan Island of New York City. And they sent out flyers. They were passing them out in the streets by the thousands. And it was free admission, free prasad, free kirtan, free lecture by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, who was then called Swamiji. There was hundreds and hundreds of seats in that auditorium. But only a few people came. The devotees were terribly disappointed. And Srila Prabhupada said, because you made it free. So therefore they think it's a cheap thing. If you make them pay, then they'll think there's something valuable about it. Yes? Then they'll take it seriously. He said, oh, but you didn't see? He says, because Prabhupada spoke as if there were thousands, millions of people there. He spoke with so much dynamic enthusiasm and he led kirtan. He said, you did not see? Narada Muni was there. Brahma was there. Devotees said, we didn't see. Prabhupada saw. Prabhupada was always preaching for the pleasure of the previous acharyas. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if nobody comes to your program, you preach with all enthusiasm to the four walls. Because we're not preaching simply for material results. We are preaching. Whatever we are doing is for the satisfaction of Guru and the Vaishnavas. And the spiritual masters and the previous acharyas are pleased by our effort, not by the results. So Lakshmi Devi, she charged a high price. And the king and queen bought this cow with the calf. And there was a cowherd man who every day took those cows out to the pastures to graze on the grasses. And in the evening, the cows would come back, would be milked. Many days went by. And there was no milk coming from this special cow. She had just had a calf. There is no reason for this. The queen went to the goshala. Where? So many days. Where is the milk from this prize cow? We spent so much. Where is the milk from this prize cow? She went to the cowherd man. Are you drinking it? Are you stealing it? He said, no, I'm not. Honest, I'm not. If tomorrow there is no milk, then I know you are. And you will be punished with your life. Now what happened is this. At a certain time every day during the grazing of the cows, this cowherd man would take a nap. He would go to sleep under a tree. And right when he went to sleep, that Brahma cow would run to the anthill and stand right over the anthill with her udder and then pour profusely nectarine, delicious, nutritious milk down. And Srinivas, accepting the loving offering of his devotee, would just look up, open his mouth, and the milk would come right into his mouth to feed him for the day. This was going on every day. This cow was a very, very faithful devotee. So on this particular day, the cowherd man pretended to go to sleep, but slightly kept one eye open to watch the cow. And he saw that cow running, watching. He saw that cow standing over an anthill, milk pouring down into the ground. Oh, he was furious. It was unbelievable. He was about to be killed because of this restless cow. He lost all intelligence. Krishna tells in Gita, when there is anger, one loses one's intelligence. And one falls down into abominable activities. So this cowherd man, in a rage of fury, picked up an axe and attacked it and hurled the axe to cut off the head of the cow. But as the axe was coming down, Srinivas leaped up and blocked the razor-sharp edge of the axe with his own forehead. When the cowherd man saw the most beautiful personality standing before him, bleeding profusely, he fell down unconscious. And news came to the king of what had happened. He came running to the place. When he first saw his servant, the cowherd man, laying unconscious, he thought he was killed. He saw blood all around. He was about to attack and chastise whoever that person was. But when he looked closely at him, he was the embodiment of all opulence and beauty. He understood that he was a special personality. And the king asked, "What has happened?" And Srinivas explained exactly. The king begged forgiveness. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmani Hitaya Cha Jagad Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. We chant this prayer, but do we really acknowledge the significance of it? Krishna is very fond of giving protection to the cows and the Brahmins. In the story of Bhrigu Muni, we see he tolerated the injustice of being kicked in the chest and forgave a Brahmin. And here he's showing his love for the cow. To save a cow, he's willing to endure the pain of an axe penetrating his own head. So he walked into the forest and he was bleeding and feeling much pain. This is the Leela of the Lord. And then Brihaspati, the priest of the demigods, approached him. He asked Brihaspati, "Can you tell me an herbal remedy to alleviate the pain and the injury of my head?" Brihaspati explained exactly the herbs that were required. So he was searching for those herbs. And at that time, he came to Varaha Kshetra, where he met Lord Varahadev. Previously, in the Satya Yuga, Hiranyaksha, with his demoniac power to please his elder brother Hiranyakashipu, created such chaos in this world that the earth planet, Bhuloka, was cast to the bottom of the Garbhodak ocean. At that time, the sages and the demigods, they were helpless. They did not know what to do. They approached Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma prayed to the Supreme Lord Vishnu, and in the course of his prayer, a very small little boar creature came out of his nose, the size of a thumb. Instantly, it grew larger and larger and larger until it was like a huge mountain. He had most exquisite lotus-like eyes. Although he was a boar, which is a wild pig, which is generally considered a very ugly animal. Sometimes we praise people by comparing them to animals. Fearless like a lion, fast like a tiger, yes, graceful like a swan, sings like a cuckoo. But have you heard ever in your life or read in any books anybody being glorified by being compared to a pig? No, you're sloppy like a pig. You're ugly like a pig. If someone calls you a swan, you feel very nice. If someone calls you a lion, you feel very nice. But if someone calls you a hog, you are a pig. It's an insult. It's a very great insult. But when Lord Varaha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, took the form of a boar, a wild pig, he was the personification of all opulences. He possessed all the six opulences. He was beautiful. He was hypnotizing people. Everyone was, all the great devotees were falling in love with him. That is the greatness of the Lord's power. How wonderful is our Lord? Achinta Shakti. He could do anything. And how he does everything. Anyone who does not have faith in these stories is the most unfortunate, dull-headed person in all of creation. The Lord is so amazing that he could take the form of the most abominable of all animals and be all attractive, so that people are falling unconscious by the beauty of this boar. People are offering prayers with tears pouring out of their eyes out of love for this boar. Sri Varaha Bhagavan Ki! Why not? If Krishna wants to show his opulence, why not take the most despicable, abominable, obnoxious of all animals and show his glories and opulences and beauty and enchant everyone's heart in that form? That is the Lord's greatness. And he lifted the earth with the tusks. Jayadev Goswami sings in his Das Avatar Stotra. After he saved the earth and delivered Hiranyaksha, Bhudevi, the presiding deity of this planet, she prayed to Lord Varaha that please make a home on earth where I can be your consort and live with you. Please make a home here. So of all places, Lord Varahadev chose what he considered the most beautiful place on earth. The Tirumala Hills. On the top of this hill, Tirumala, it is called Varaha Kshetra. Bhudevi gave this land to Lord Varahadev where they lived together very happily. So Srinivas came. And he asked for a place to reside here. Please listen carefully. Lord Varahadev gave him a tract of land. Srinivas said, if I'm taking this land for you, I want to pay rent. But I don't have anything. But the rent that I will pay is this, that I will induce all of my devotees for all the rest of the time in Kali Yuga. Anyone who comes to see me in my temple must first come and offer their worship and honor to you, Lord Varahadev. So to follow this tradition, which very few people do, it will be very nice tomorrow if before going in to see Lord Balaji, we offer our honor, worship, and take blessings from Sri Bhuvarahadev, who are residing on the banks of the Swami Pushkarini, a beautiful sacred lake, non-different than the river Ganges, which absolves one's sins. Lord Varahadev told Srinivas that your eternal mother is living with me. She has been acting as a very faithful maidservant, waiting for your incarnation. Her name is Bakula Malika, or Vakula Devi, and she will take care of you. And she will put the herbs upon your forehead and love you like her own mother, like her own son. So Varahadev called for Vakula Devi. And when she saw Srinivas, immediately her motherly love just erupted within her heart. And Srinivas's love for her awakened. Vakula Devi embraced him. And she gathered the various herbs and placed it with camphor and saffron and musk and very sacred ingredients. And she made a paste and put it on Balaji's forehead. And to honor the love of Vakula Devi and to remember the Lord's willingness to sacrifice for the welfare of his devotee, to this day, Lord Venkateshwar is wearing that sacred mixture of paste upon his forehead. So Bakula Devi she showed such motherly affection. It is explained that previously Bakula Devi was Yashoda Mayi. Krishna lived in Vrindavan for about approximately 12 and a half years. And it is the aspiration of every mother to arrange for her children's marriage. But Krishna left Vrindavan, and it was in Dwarka, when he was under the care of Vasudeva and Devaki, that he married 8 queens and then 16,000 others. So Yashoda Mai was deprived of the opportunity to participate in these marriage ceremonies. But Krishna, knowing her heart, gave her the benediction that in a future incarnation, you will be my mother and you will make the arrangements for my marriage. Time passed. They lived in the forest together. He was often in his anthill doing tapasya. It came to his notice that in the forest on the top of the hill, there were some wild animals, many, tigers, lions, elephants, and they were harassing innocent people, sometimes even devouring them. So Srinivas told Vakula that I want to go out on a hunting excursion to protect the innocent from these dangerous animals. But as a mother, she said, no, you cannot go out there. It is very dangerous. It is a very strange place. You should not go. But he was insisting. So finally, she accepted. So he put on the robe of a hunter with a bow and an arrow and a horse. And he went out. And there he saw a gigantic wild elephant. The elephant was running. And Srinivas was galloping on his horse after the elephant. The elephant came into a garden. In that garden, there was a beautiful princess of the name Padmavati, along with her maidservants. The elephant lifted his trunk and offered praise to Padmavati Devi, and then disappeared into the forest. Srinivas came right behind him. And when he saw Padmavati, who was standing stunned by fear of the elephant that just approached her, Srinivas himself was stunned with her beauty. He got off of his horse. He said, "Who are you? Have you descended from the heavenly worlds? In this earth planet, there is no one so beautiful. There is no one so enchanting and so pure as yourself. Please tell me who you are." She said, my name is Padmavati. And I am the daughter of the king, Aksharaj, from the dynasty of the moon. And I'm here in the garden with all of my friends. Can you tell me, good sir, who are you? He said, I am also from a royal dynasty coming from the moon god. My father is Vasudev and my name is Krishna. And now my mother has taken the form of Bakula Devi and she is searching to find a suitable wife for my marriage. And just then, the maidservants of the princess came and she saw this hunter talking with the princess. They were very offended by this. Who are you? Who are you? What are you doing here? And they started warning Padmavati. You are a girl of great royalty. You cannot just be speaking to a hunter, a strange person alone in the forest. What is this? And Srinivas smiled and said, Oh young maidservants, do not be alarmed. Said, I am in love with her, and she is in love with me, and I am going to propose to marry her. Huh? Padmavati began to blush. She looked down and she said, First you have to ask my parents their permission. And the maidservants, they were very angry. You are seducing the princess. Get out from here. Get out from here. They picked up stones and hurled the stones at Srinivas. Again and again they were throwing stones and they were chasing after him. He jumped on his horse and rode away and they were chasing after throwing stones. He was feeling great pain. He returned to the home of Vakula Devi. And she saw that he looked unhappy. Why are you unhappy? He said, because I am in love. But the girl that I love, I cannot go near. All her friends threw stones on me. And Vakula Malika, she said, you are the supreme personality of Godhead. How could you be enchanted by a mere mortal woman of this world? But still, whatever you desire is my will, is my life. If you desire, I will go to that place to negotiate marriage with her parents. Srinivas said, you do not understand who this girl is. And he explained the story. There was a great sage who lived in the Treta Yuga. His name was Kushadvaj. He was performing a yajna. With great devotion, he was chanting Vedic mantras. From his mantra chanting, the goddess of fortune took birth. She took birth from the yajna of the chanting of the Vedic mantras. And therefore her father gave her the name Vedavati. When she grew up to marriageable age, she was so beautiful, an ocean of good qualities. All great princes, kings, they wanted to marry her, promising wealth, riches, luxuries, and immense pleasures. But she had no attraction to any of them. Her heart was fixed exclusively on Lord Vishnu. From his divine vision, Kushadvaj understood she is a goddess of fortune. Only Lord Vishnu is suitable to be her husband. But it is not easy to attain Lord Vishnu. Kushadvaj sent his daughter into the Himalayan jungles to live all alone, to perform severe austerities, meditating on the lotus feet of Vishnu, to attract his mercy, to accept her as his wife. She remained in Himalayas for thousands of years, fasting, subjected to the cold, snowy winters, to the hot, blazing summers, to the dangers of snakes and animals and insects, tolerating all difficulty. Such a great example. This is Vyavashayat Makabudhir Eke Hakudanandana. Kings and princes and devatas were approaching to marry her, offering her royal palaces, offering her luxuries, jewels, fine garments and food. And not only that, but they were most handsome, chivalrous, and opulent in all respects. She rejected them. For what? To live in the jungle, wearing a deer skin, doing tapasya for thousands and thousands of years. This is devotional service. We want Vishnu. We want devotional service to Krishna. He is our goal and ideal in life. So many things may come to us. Yes, the cheap things of this world, we may get money, we may get comforts, we may get fame, we may get so many things, we may get all kinds of pleasures. But a devotee is willing to give it all up to perform austerity. And that's all we have is austerity. A sadhana bhakta is a person who gives up so many of the pleasures of this world for what? We don't even have Krishna. We're not tasting the love of Krishna. It's just tapasya. But that's the price. If we really want Krishna, we have to be willing, with an empty heart of nothing except tapasya, carry on, even if it takes thousands and thousands and millions of births. That was Mukunda Das' example. He was willing to suffer in separation, faithfully, for 10 million births, if he knew in the end he would get even one glimpse of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That is devotion. Enthusiasm and patience. That is the example of Vedavati. She gave up all the promises, hopes, and opportunities of this world to do severe austerity. And what did she get out of it? Just living in the forest. Thousands of years passed. One day, the king of the Rakshasas, Ravana, was flying by in the airways, and he saw Vedavati. He was immediately enchanted by her beauty. He came down and looked closer. Oh, the exquisite elegance of her form, covered only with a crude deer skin, hair becoming matted, but yet she was effulgent with elegant charm. Ravana could not control his senses. He approached her, assuming the form with one head and two arms. And we'll hear from the Sundarakanda that when Ravana assumed this form, he was youthful and he was so magnificently handsome and strong. He was a scholar as well. He was speaking lovely poetry to win the heart of this girl. He was glorifying each limb of her body and the fragrance of her form. I am Ravana. I am the king. I have defeated Indra and all the devatas. I wish for you to be my wife. You come with me. She said, I have given my heart to Vishnu. How amazing. All this tapasya, thousands of years, and Vishnu never showed himself to her even for a second. Ashlasya vapadratam panashtu mama darshanam maramahatam karotu va yatatatatavitatatu lampato matpuranatastu se evanapura.